This is a When Walls Can Talk network podcast.
This episode delves into the topics of kidnapping, sex trafficking, forced labor, and other distressing themes related to the Shanghai tunnels. Listener discretion is advised. Hello, all my listeners, and welcome back to another episode of When Walls Can Talk. I'm your host, Jeremy, and I'm thrilled to have you back with me on this journey through the mysterious and the unknown. Before we start today's episode, as always, I want to take this moment to highlight another one of our recent reviews that just really meant the world to me. Our listener said, "I know it seems contradictory for a paranormal podcast to be soothing, but Jeremy's voice, insight, and respect for the subject matter makes it an absolute dream to listen to when winding down. The show is just brilliant from start to finish." Thank you so much for those words. I just so appreciate every single one of you listening. And if I haven't heard from you, I would love to. If you want a shout out at the beginning of our next episode, let me know what you enjoyed about it. Feel free to drop your Instagram handle in your review and I'll give you a follow. And it's a fantastic way for me to connect with other passionate listeners of our show. If you haven't already, don't forget to go find our Facebook group as well, where we're going to start diving even deeper into the mysteries and share some behind-the-scenes content as we move along. So with that being said, let's get into today's episode. Buckle up and let's explore the unknown together. The streets of Portland buzzed around me, the warm hum of evening conversations filling my ears, the clinking of glasses and distant laughter from the saloons. The City of Roses, with its Victorian charm, was supposed to be my haven, but tonight, it betrayed me. I could feel the cool evening air on my skin as I stepped out, the gas lamps casting a soft golden glow that danced on the cobblestones beneath my feet. The scent of fresh roses and the distant aroma of baked goods wafting through the air, drawing me towards the promise of a local dance. But as I walked, the comforting scents began to fade, replaced by the musty odor of dampness. The shadows seemed to stretch out, reaching for me, the alleyways growing eerily silent. Before I could process what was happening, a hand, cold and clammy, covered my mouth, yanking me into the darkness. My vision blurred, the familiar sights of the city replaced by dimly lit tunnels. The taste of fear, bitter and metallic, filled my mouth. The once comforting sounds of the city were now muffled, replaced by the chilling echo of footsteps on wet stone. The air around me felt cold, damp, and heavy, making every breath a struggle. I wasn't alone. I could hear the soft sobs and whispers of others, their despair echoing in the distance. The life I knew, the dreams I had, seemed so far away. And as the chilling reality of my situation settled in, one thought consumed me. Would I ever feel the warmth of the sun again? Today we're not just journeying beneath the streets of Portland, Oregon. We're diving deep into the psyche of a city and its inhabitants, past and present. The Shanghai tunnels, a network of illicit passages that once bustled with activity, now lie silent, holding within them stories of ambition, crime, and desperation. As we navigate these underground labyrinths, we'll confront the myths and realities of the Shanghaiing practice. Were these tunnels truly the backdrop for such dark deeds? Or have tales of their sinister past been exaggerated over time, morphing into urban legends that captivate and terrify in equal measure? But this isn't just a journey into the past. It's a reflection on our present. In our modern world, where we pride ourselves on transparency and openness, what are the Shanghai tunnels of today? What secrets do our cities still hold, hidden just beneath the surface? And how do these secrets shape our understanding of ourselves and our communities? We'll be forced to confront some uncomfortable truths. How much of a city's dark history is buried, both literally and metaphorically? How do myths and legends shape our perception of historical places? And in our quest for entertainment and thrill, is it ethical to capitalize on dark histories for tourism? These are just some of the questions we'll grapple with in today's episode. So as we embark on this journey together, I invite you to keep an open mind, challenge your preconceptions, and most importantly, listen to the walls. Because, as we'll discover, sometimes they have quite the story to tell. I'm Jeremy Haig, and this is When Walls Can Talk. Throughout the ages, man has repeated the same earnest saying, more of a question really, or perhaps even a plea, if these walls could talk. But what if they do, and always have? Perhaps their stories, memories, and messages are all around us, if only we would take the moment to listen. On this podcast, we reinvestigate legends and tales of the past and allow the echoes of their lessons to live on once again, informing us, educating us, and sharing new and unique insight into the inner workings of the paranormal and spiritual world. Will you dare to listen? This is When Walls Can Talk, the podcast. Before we delve into the mysteries of the Shanghai tunnels, it's important to me to address a term that has become synonymous with them. Shanghaiing is a term that, while historically accurate in its usage, carries with it inherent racial undertones. At When Walls Can Talk, we recognize and acknowledge the inherent racism of the term Shanghai to refer to the practice of kidnapping and enslaving laborers in the 19th and early 20th centuries. We use the word here because it is the most widely searched for term on the topic, and our aim is to connect listeners interested in learning more about this topic with accurate information. With that understanding, let's journey back in time to the bustling port city of Portland. The city of Portland, Oregon has a rich and complex history that intertwines with the narrative of the Shanghai tunnels. Portland began its journey in 1843 when business partners William Overton and Asa Lovejoy claimed land on the west bank of the Willamette River. By 1851, it was officially incorporated as a city. The land, previously inhabited by the Upper Chinook Indians, soon saw a surge of settlers, traders, and entrepreneurs. The city's strategic location, at the confluence of the Willamette and Columbia Rivers, made it a prime spot for trade and commerce. As Portland grew, it existed in the shadow of Oregon City, the territorial capital. Yet, its deep water access gave it an edge, attracting businesses and settlers alike. By 1850, Portland was the largest settlement in the Pacific Northwest. But it certainly wasn't all glamour. The city was often referred to as Stump Town and Mud Town due to the remnants of cleared forests and the muddy streets that posed challenges for its residents, often forcing them to find alternative means of transporting goods throughout the city, often underground. The mid to late 19th century was a period of significant change. A major fire in 1873 devastated parts of downtown Portland. The city also grappled with issues of sanitation, leading to criticisms of it being called filthy. Yet amidst these challenges, Portland continued to grow, absorbing neighboring areas and expanding its reach. The daily life of a Portland resident during this era was a mix of hard work, community engagement, and navigating the challenges of a growing city. The population was diverse, with a mix of settlers, traders, laborers, and indigenous communities. The city's growth also attracted a surge of artists, intellectuals, and entrepreneurs, making it a melting pot of cultures and ideas. The world of Portland during the Shanghai Tunnel's era offers a mirror to many modern cities. The challenges of urbanization, the tensions between progress and preservation, and the spirit of resilience are themes that resonate with us even today. In the story of the Shanghai Tunnels, it's essential to remember the broader context of the city that played host to these dark tales. How does the history of Portland shape our understanding of the tunnels? And what lessons can we draw from the past as we navigate the complexities of our modern world? Many cities in the United States, from Seattle to Sacramento, Prescott to Butte, ended up with underground tunnels beneath their original downtown areas. These tunnels were born out of necessity, convenience, or simply the challenges of the terrain. But as with many places hidden from the public eye, they became breeding grounds for illicit activities. Portland's tunnels, for instance, were initially used to efficiently deliver goods from the ships in the harbor. But as night fell, these very tunnels bore witness to some of the city's darkest deeds, from drugs, gambling, and illegal booze to the more sinister acts of human trafficking. These tunnels saw it all. The gold rush of the mid-19th century saw a massive labor shortage in the shipping business. Ship captains, unwilling to offer higher wages, turned to a more sinister solution: free labor. They hired crimps, ruthless individuals who would befriend newcomers, drug them, and then sell them off to ships. These unfortunate souls would often wake up chained in the bowels of a ship far from shore. But it wasn't just men who were victims. Young women, often new to the city, would be befriended, drugged, and then imprisoned in the tunnels as sex slaves to ruthless madams. The process of breaking their spirit was brutal, often leading them to a life of forced prostitution. Establishments like the White Eagle Saloon and the upscale Merchant Hotel, both connected to the tunnels, played a role in this dark trade. Researchers and professors from Portland have reason to believe that over 3,000 people annually would be drugged with knockout drops and pushed through trapdoors and saloons, where crimps would be waiting below to shuttle them to the depths of ships, to either work as crew on board or be sold as slaves in foreign lands. These crimps would be given $50 a head in blood money. Many of their victims, however, didn't make it out of the tunnels and fell victim to overdoses from the drugs used to subdue them. These bodies would be fed to the furnaces beneath the Portland streets, never to be seen again. For the few that did survive, they were kept unconscious until deep into the rough waters of the Pacific. Upon waking up, the captain would present them with papers to sign, selling out their own rights. If they refused, they were treated as stowaways and tossed into the sea. The 20s and 30s, however, saw a shift. With prohibition in full swing, the underground became the go-to place for illegal bars, gambling dens, and speakeasies. While the demand for prostitutes remained high, many of the kidnapped women were now sold and transported to other port cities or even overseas. By 1941, the era of human trafficking in Portland's tunnels came to an end. These tunnels were padlocked, keeping the vice industries out. They remained off-limits for years until rediscovered and renovated for tours by organizations like the Cascade Historical Society and Portland Walking Tours. As we journey further into the depths of these tunnels, let's keep an open mind, seeking to understand not just the events of the past, but also their impact on the present. How does history shape our perceptions, our beliefs, and our understanding of the world around us? And what can the Shanghai Tunnels teach us about the fine line between fact and fiction? Since the 1970s, Whispers have grown louder about this secret network of tunnels beneath the streets and buildings of the Portland waterfront. These tunnels, it said, were constructed to support the dark and illegal practice of Shanghaiing, forcibly supplying crews to outbound sailing ships in the late 19th and early 20th centuries. Imagine for a moment being in a tavern, enjoying a drink, only to find yourself waking up on a ship, bound for unknown waters, having been kidnapped and sold to a ship's captain. This was the fate of many who were Shanghaied. The Shanghai tunnels of Portland have long been a subject of intrigue, debate, and for some, a chilling testament to the darker chapters of our history. The very notion that beneath the bustling streets of Portland, a vast network of tunnels was used for such nefarious purposes is both fascinating and horrifying. But what truly perplexes me is the divide between those who believe in the authenticity of these tales and those who dismiss them as mere urban legends. Many distinguished scholars, with years of research and dedication to their craft, firmly believe in the veracity of these stories. They have ventured deep into the labyrinthian maze of tunnels, uncovering artifacts that hint at a life once lived in the shadows below. These relics, whether they be personal items, remnants of makeshift living quarters, or even traces of the illegal trades, serve as silent witnesses to a bygone era. An era where the desperate and the unscrupulous collided in the dark underbelly of the city. Yet despite this mounting evidence, there remains a faction of historians who adamantly deny the existence of such a vast tunnel network dedicated to the dark trade of Shanghaiing. They argue that while the tunnels undoubtedly exist, their purpose and extent have been exaggerated over time, morphing into the stuff of legends. But why? Why would there be such a concerted effort to downplay or even erase this chapter of Portland's history? One possible explanation could be the very nature of the stories themselves. The tales of the Shanghai tunnels are not just about hidden passages. They touch upon societal issues, corruption, and the very fabric of the city's foundation. Admitting to such a dark past could tarnish the city's reputation, affecting everything from tourism to its standing in historical circles. Furthermore, acknowledging these stories would mean confronting the uncomfortable truths about the city's complicity in these heinous acts. Another perspective is to consider the human tendency to distance ourselves from uncomfortable truths. By relegating these tales to the realm of myths and legends, it becomes easier to detach from the grim realities they represent. It's a protective mechanism, shielding us from the harsher aspects of our past. However, as we've seen time and time again, history has a way of resurfacing, demanding to be acknowledged and understood. The Shanghai tunnels, with their echoing whispers and chilling tales, serve as a stark reminder that the past, no matter how deeply buried, will always find a way to speak its truth. In the end, whether one believes in the full extent of the Shanghai tunnels' dark history, or views it as an embellished legend, one thing is clear. These tunnels hold stories, secrets, and lessons that are integral to understanding the very soul of Portland. And as we continue to delve deeper into these mysteries, we must approach them with an open mind, a respectful heart, and a commitment to uncovering the truth, no matter where it leads. Shanghaiing wasn't unique to Portland. It was a practice that arose out of the complexities of international maritime law in the 19th century. Captains, desperate to replenish their crew strength, would resort to such drastic measures, especially when sailors would jump ship to escape their contracts. Cities like San Francisco were infamous for such activities during the gold rush. Portland's rise as a major Pacific Coast port in the late 19th century, driven by the lucrative wheat export trade, saw a fleet of sailing vessels arriving, especially during the late summer. These ships would then set sail for distant lands like Liverpool, England, and various ports in Asia and Europe. The long and arduous journey often led to discontent among the crew, making the services of a crimp someone who supplied sailors, willingly or otherwise, to be in high demand. In the 1930s, journalist Stuart Holbrook took to the airwaves, sharing tales of Shanghaiing on the Portland waterfront. While Holbrook's stories captured the imagination of many, they also raised questions about their authenticity. Were these tales rooted in fact, or were they embellished accounts designed to captivate listeners? Holbrook's broadcasts, regardless of their veracity, played a pivotal role in popularizing the legends of the Shanghai tunnels. Fast forward to the 1970s, and we encounter Michael P. Jones, a man who claimed to have unearthed these long-concealed tunnels. As the manager of the Transit Bank, Jones was in a unique position to bring attention to his discovery. While he acknowledged the tunnel's use for more mundane activities, such as transporting goods or evading police raids, he emphasized their alleged role in the dark trade of Shanghaiing. Capitalizing on the intrigue surrounding these tunnels, Jones began offering tours, further entrenching their lore in Portland's cultural fabric. But this brings us to a crucial juncture of reflection. In an era where a wealth of information is just a click away, how do we sift through the layers of narrative to uncover the truth? How do we navigate the murky waters of history, where documented events, personal testimonies, and age-old tales converge? And as we grapple with the mysteries of the past, we must also ask ourselves, what are the Shanghai tunnels of today? In our interconnected world, are there still hidden networks and systems that operate in the shadows, away from the public eye? If the Shanghai trade was real, then I'm sure you're currently asking yourself the same question I was. How could such atrocities persist for nearly a century without intervention? The answer lies in the very fabric of Portland's governance, revealing a sinister alliance between power and vice. It's inconceivable to think that the extensive operations within the Shanghai tunnels went unnoticed by Portland's authorities. The very scale of the operations, the number of people involved, and the money that exchanged hands suggests a level of complicity that's hard to ignore. The city's officials, rather than being oblivious, were likely turning a blind eye, if not actively benefiting from the trade. The victims of Shanghaiing, often deemed the dregs of society, were easy targets. Immigrants, the poor, the homeless, and those without a voice were seen as expendable, less worthy of protection or justice. This societal bias provided a convenient cover for the city's officials. By dehumanizing these individuals, the authorities could justify their inaction, dismissing the disappearances and the underground trade as mere consequences of a person's life choices or circumstances. It's a stark reminder of the dangers of unchecked power and societal prejudice. When those in authority prioritize personal gain over the welfare of their citizens, the very foundations of justice and morality are eroded. The victims of the tunnels, though marginalized in their time, now serve as a terrifying example of the consequences of such governance. We're compelled to ask, how do we ensure that the marginalized voices of today are heard? How do we hold those in power accountable and prevent history from repeating itself? In a bid to preserve and showcase the chilling history of the Shanghai tunnels, modern restorations have recreated certain sections to mirror their original state. Among these are the holding cells, darkened chambers that once imprisoned the unsuspecting victims of Shanghaiers. These recreated cells are not for the faint of heart. Descending into them, one is immediately enveloped in an oppressive blackness, a void where light and hope seem to vanish. The dimensions are claustrophobically small, a stark reminder of the inhumane conditions the captives endured. In these cells, countless souls would have awakened to their grim reality, disoriented and terrified. While these cells serve as a testament to the past, many visitors claim they are not entirely silent. Disturbing accounts have emerged of phantom screams echoing through the tunnels, the desperate cries of unseen prisoners. Some have reported the unmistakable sound of frantic kicking against the cell's walls, as if someone or something is trying to break free from an eternal captivity. The true horror of these accounts lies in the realization that, once upon a time, these screams might have been real. Victims, upon regaining consciousness, would have screamed and pleaded for help, hoping against hope that someone above ground would hear them. But their cries fell on deaf ears. The establishments overhead, many of which were complicit in the Shanghaiing trade, had been bribed to turn a blind eye and a deaf ear to the horrors unfolding beneath them. The very ground they stood upon muffled the desperate pleas of the imprisoned, ensuring their torment remained a hidden secret. In the realm of paranormal investigations, there's a concept known as trigger objects. Items or settings that resonate with spirits, evoking memories or emotions from their past lives. By recreating the holding cells of the Shanghai tunnels, we've inadvertently crafted one of the most potent trigger objects imaginable. These cells, with their oppressive darkness and chilling authenticity, don't just resonate with the living. They echo with the memories of those long departed. The very act of recreating these cells might be seen as an invitation, a beckoning to the spirits that once inhabited the original chambers. For these entities, the cells could stir a whirlwind of emotions, fear, anger, despair. Such intense emotional energy can act as a catalyst, amplifying paranormal activity within the tunnels. Moreover, the reactions of modern visitors, their shock, sorrow, and empathy might further fuel this energy. Spirits, especially those trapped in a state of unrest, are believed to be sensitive to the emotions of the living. When visitors enter these cells, their emotional responses, whether it's a shiver down the spine, a tear shed, or a whispered prayer, might resonate with the spirits, bridging the gap further between the living and the dead. It's a sobering thought. In our quest to understand and remember the past, we might inadvertently be stirring the echoes of bygone eras, awakening memories and entities that have been lain dormant. While this can lead to increased paranormal activity, it also underscores the profound interconnectedness of past and present, reminding us that history, no matter how distant, is never truly gone. It lingers, waiting for the right trigger to come alive once more. Navigating Portland's past is akin to traversing a labyrinth, where every turn reveals a new shadow or concealed truth. The city's very essence, both tangible and intangible, is intertwined with stories of anguish and manipulation. Yet amidst this darkness, tales of tenacity and undying spirits emerge, challenging the silence. The Shanghai tunnels, more than mere underground passages, are repositories of countless souls and their narratives. They beckon us to listen, to empathize, and to confront the uncomfortable truths of a city that often chose convenience over conscience. Consider Nina, whose courage shone brightly against the backdrop of her grim circumstances, or the ill-fated crew of the Jennifer Jo, bound by chains in a tragic maritime fate. Their stories and countless others punctuate the city's history, urging us to reflect and learn. By acknowledging these tales, we not only pay homage to the lost souls, but also arm ourselves with the knowledge to prevent history's darker chapters from repeating. Amidst the hustle and bustle of Portland's vibrant streets, the Merchant Hotel stands as an enigmatic relic of days gone by. Its intricate facades and regal presence hint at a time when Portland was on the cusp of greatness, a burgeoning metropolis filled with dreams. Yet beneath its grand exterior, the hotel conceals tales as shadowy as the night. The Merchant Hotel wasn't merely a sanctuary for weary travelers. It was a pulsating epicenter, drawing both the city's luminaries and adventurers from distant shores. But its strategic location near the Shanghai tunnels made it a nexus for clandestine dealings, from covert smuggling routes to the harrowing world of forced servitude. And it's within this murky backdrop that we uncover the heart-wrenching saga of Nina. Nina, beacon of resilience and hope, was ensnared in a life she never envisioned. The hotel's subterranean catacombs became her cage, where night after night, she was auctioned to faceless strangers. Yet in the midst of this abyss, salvation beckoned. Compassionate missionaries, determined to cleanse the city of its sinister undercurrents, extended a hand to Nina. They offered an escape, a promise of a life reborn. Embracing this chance, Nina exposed her tormentors, yearning for the chains that bound her to shatter. Tragically, her dreams were snuffed out all too soon. Deceived by those she believed in, Nina's life was extinguished, her final resting place being the chilling depths of the hotel's elevator shaft. Now the echoes of the Merchant Hotel reverberate in Old Town Pizza. As diners relish their meals in what was once the hotel's opulent lobby, tales of uncanny encounters abound. Murmurs of a spectral woman dressed in black, elusive scents of an age-old perfume, and unexpected gusts of cold air are shared amongst patrons. It's as if Nina's essence remains, tethered eternally to the scene of her tragic end. Beneath the tranquil facade of the Portland Harbor lies another haunting tale, one that the waves whisper on moonlit nights. In the year 1902, the Jennifer Joe, a splendid schooner boasting four towering masts, sailed into the pages of Portland's dark history. Her decks bore the weight of nearly 100 souls, each ensnared in the treacherous web of Shanghaiing. These men, drugged and bound in chains, faced a life of relentless toil on the high seas. Yet fate had an even grimmer design. The Jennifer Joe, with her human cargo, was swallowed by the harbor's depths. However, the waters couldn't quell the spirits of those aboard. As the calendar marks the day of their watery doom, eerie phenomena unfold. Locals and sailors alike share tales of spectral figures emerging from the mist, their mournful cries piercing the silence of the harbor. Whispers of chilling encounters, of ethereal hands drenched in seawater reaching out, and of desperate pleas for salvation permeate the air. These once vibrant men, betrayed and forsaken, now traverse the boundary between the living and the dead, yearning for the justice that eluded them in life. Obviously, the Shanghai tunnels are no strangers to malevolence, and among the darkest entities are the crimps. These ruthless individuals, motivated by greed, played a pivotal role in the kidnapping and selling of unsuspecting souls. Their spirits, dark and foreboding, are often seen lurking in the tunnels. The Lotus nightclub's basement in particular is a hot spot for paranormal activity. Employees speak of an oppressive atmosphere, of feeling watched, and of a malevolent bartender spirit that seems to take pleasure in tormenting the living. His misdeeds, it appears, have left a mark on the very fabric of the place. The 1920s and 30s saw Portland's underground come alive in a different way. Speakeasies, hidden from prying eyes, became the norm, but with them came danger. One fateful night, a rival gang, donning stolen police uniforms, unleashed terror between ringlers and the Crystal Ballroom. This massacre that ensued left no survivors. Today, their spirits, both the innocent partygoers and the ruthless gangsters, are said to haunt these locations. Witnesses speak of ghostly apparitions rushing through, of drinks being knocked over, and of an overwhelming sense of panic. The echoes of that tragic night continue to reverberate, a chilling reminder of the violence that once unfolded. The Shanghai tunnels, a relic of Portland's shadowed past, continue to evolve as a nexus of mysteries. While their historical tales are chilling, recent discoveries suggest that the tunnels are still very much alive, resonating with both ancient and contemporary energies. Venturing into the lesser-known chambers of the tunnels, caretakers have stumbled upon intriguing evidence of recent human presence. Scattered ritual candles, intricate symbols etched into the damp walls, and tools reminiscent of witchcraft practices paint a vivid picture of clandestine gatherings. These aren't mere remnants of curious explorers. They hint at deliberate, ritualistic activities. Parallel to these discoveries, there's been a noticeable uptick in paranormal incidents within the tunnels. Whispered voices, unexplained cold spots, and fleeting shadows have become more frequent. The correlation between the ritualistic remnants and this surge in supernatural occurrences is impossible to dismiss. Could modern rituals be amplifying the tunnel's already potent energies? It's crucial to tread carefully here, though, avoiding the trap of demonizing witchcraft based on misunderstandings. Witchcraft, in its essence, is a rich tapestry of traditions and intentions. In its many forms, it's a practice steeped in tradition, reverence, and often positive intent. I can attest to this, as my own practices in witchcraft involve rituals and symbols that, to the untrained eye, might appear ominous. However, they are often conduits for positive energy and healing. My personal journey with witchcraft has been one of empowerment, healing, and positive manifestations. The tools and symbols, though they might seem enigmatic, are often channels for benevolent forces. However, like any powerful tool, witchcraft's impact hinges on the wielder's intent. While many practitioners harness its energies for protection, love, or prosperity, others might be drawn to its more esoteric aspects, seeking communion with the unknown. In a place as charged as the Shanghai tunnels, rituals with darker intentions could inadvertently, or deliberately, open gateways, allowing entities from other realms to seep through. If the Shanghai tunnels have indeed become a conduit for malevolent forces, the repercussions could ripple outwards. A place already steeped in pain and tragedy might become a hotspot for paranormal disturbances, affecting not just those within the tunnels, but potentially casting shadows over Portland itself. As we grapple with these new revelations, our approach must be twofold. Respect for the myriad practices of witchcraft and vigilance against potential threats. The Shanghai tunnels, with their complex interplay of past and present, remind us of the delicate balance between exploration and reverence, curiosity and caution. Deep within the labyrinthian expanse of the Shanghai tunnels, explorers have unveiled a chamber that stands apart from the rest. This isn't a space of hidden passages or concealed alcoves. It's an open arena, echoing with the sounds of a foreign past. This chamber, with its worn-out floor and remnants of ropes, once served as an underground boxing ring. At a time when boxing was deemed illegal, the tunnels provided the perfect cover for those seeking the thrill of clandestine fights. This wasn't just any fight club. It was a realm where rules were discarded and raw, primal energy reigned supreme. Among the many fighters who might have graced this underground arena, one name stands out. Mysterious Billy Smith, a boxer with a reputation that was as enigmatic as his name suggests. Smith was notorious for his unorthodox fighting style, but what truly set him apart was his penchant for biting his opponents, particularly their ears. Tales of his fierce bouts, where he would often resort to this savage tactic, became the stuff of legends. Today, visitors to this part of the Shanghai tunnels often report an eerie sensation. As they stand in the midst of the old boxing ring, some have described a peculiar feeling around their ears. It's not just a whisper of cold air or a fleeting touch. It's the unmistakable sensation of teeth, invisible yet palpable, grazing their ears. Could this be the lingering presence of mysterious Billy Smith, still prowling his old battleground, seeking his next opponent? Amidst these complex mysteries of the tunnels, there lies a section that commands a hushed reverence. Beneath the dimly lit archways, where the ground shifts from stone to earth, explorers have stumbled upon what appears to be a subterranean cemetery. This particular section, distinguished by its dirt floor, stands in stark contrast to the rest of the tunnels. The subtle depressions in the ground and the inexplicable aura of solemnity all points towards one haunting possibility. This might have been a final resting place for many souls. The discovery of this potential cemetery has resonated deeply with Portland's Chinese community. Elders, bearers of oral traditions passed down through the generations, have come forward with tales that lend credence to this theory. Their narratives speak of ancestors who, after facing untold hardships in the tunnels, were laid to rest in this very chamber. The stories, while varied in details, converge on the belief that this section of the tunnels served as a sacred burial ground. The significance of this discovery cannot be understated. If indeed this is a cemetery, it transforms the Shanghai tunnels from a mere historical site to hallowed ground. Every step taken here becomes a gesture of respect, every whisper a prayer for the departed. The Shanghai tunnels, already a tapestry of tales both harrowing and intriguing, gain an added layer of depth with the discovery of this potential cemetery. It serves as a poignant reminder of the countless lives intertwined with the tunnel's history, many of whom might have found their final resting place within its depths. As we tread these grounds, it's essential to do so with reverence, honoring the memories of those who came before us and ensuring their stories are never forgotten. Maya Angelou once said, "History, despite its wrenching pain, cannot be unlived, but if faced with courage, need not be lived again." As we emerge from the shadows, Maya Angelou's words resonate deeply, echoing through the winding, shadowy corridors of the Shanghai tunnels. These tunnels, with their layers of dark histories and paranormal mysteries, have whispered tales that have both disturbed and enlightened us. Tales of greed, of desperation, and of survival, even in the face of unimaginable adversity, seeks justice, acknowledgement, and remembrance. Throughout this journey, we've grappled with thought-provoking questions. How did societal structures and government complicity allow for such heinous acts to persist? What does it mean for us today, living in a world where, despite advancements, many still suffer in silence, their pleas muffled by the very institutions meant to protect them? And how do we reconcile with a past that, though buried deep beneath our feet, still resonates in the walls around us? When Walls Can Talk, Where Paranormal Mysteries and Dark Histories Collide, is not just a title for me. It's a testament to my commitment to unearthing stories that have been silenced, forgotten, or overshadowed. The Shanghai Tunnels episode epitomizes this mission. Here in the heart of Portland, walls do more than just talk. They scream, they cry, they sing, and they implore us to listen, to understand, and to remember. The paranormal activities here, the ghostly apparitions and the chilling sensations, are not mere tales meant to thrill. They are manifestations of a past that refuses to be forgotten. They serve as reminders that history is alive and intertwined with our present. The spirits of the Shanghai tunnels, whether they are the restless souls of the Shanghai, the tragic figure of Nina, or countless others who met their fate in the dark depths, are not just remnants of a bygone era. They are symbols of the human experience, of the struggles and triumphs, the injustices and the hopes that have shaped our world. In our modern age, where technology bridges gaps and information is at our fingertips, it's easy to become disconnected from our roots. Yet as we've journeyed through the Shanghai tunnels, we're reminded that our present is a direct reflection of our past. The structures we build, the societies we shape, and the stories we tell are all influenced by the echoes of yesteryears. And while we've come a long way, there are still battles to be fought, voices to be heard, and stories to be told. So as we step out of the dimly lit tunnels and into the light of the present day, let's carry with us the lessons that we've learned. Let's strive to create a world where walls no longer need to talk, because their tales are acknowledged, understood, and honored. Let's ensure that history, with all its wrenching pain, is faced with courage, so that the future generations need not relive it. In the end, the Shanghai tunnels, as with many of the stories on this podcast, serve as a mirror, reflecting both the darkest corners and the brightest hopes of humanity. And as we move forward, let's remember that while walls can talk, it's up to us to listen, to learn, and to ensure that the echoes of the past guide us toward a brighter and more compassionate future. I hope this episode was enlightening and beneficial to all my listeners, and a huge thank you from myself, Jeremy Haig, the host, producer, and editor of When Walls Can Talk. I hope you're all right with a slightly shorter episode than usual today in order to make a little bit of space, because next week is going to be massive. For a little teaser for those of you who stuck with me all the way to the end, clearly you are my fans and my friends, so thank you. We will be leaving America and traveling to Great Britain. So we will be doing a two-part episode on the tales and secrets of the Tower of London. Now, don't be afraid. I will be releasing both parts of the episode one right after another, because where I'm leaving you would be cruel, frankly, to not do part two right away. So you can look forward to probably, I think my script is like 45 pages, so you can probably look forward to at least 2 hours, if maybe not a little bit more, to cover all of it. There's so much stuff that I was looking at it, trying to decide what I could cut to make it a little bit shorter and a little bit more digestible, but in good conscience, I couldn't do it. There's too many incredible stories seeped into the walls of that former palace, prison, zoo. There's too much that we all need to know about. I'll be honest with you a little bit. I knew very little about Tower of London going into my research for it, and I had to pick my jaw up off the floor several times because I did not expect to be quite as fascinated as I was. I think this is probably one of the most invested I've ever gotten in the research aspect of preparing for an episode, so I genuinely hope that you all enjoy it. But for now, it's time for me to let you go. A reminder, though, that if you are listening to this episode, make a screenshot of whatever podcast platform you are listening on and share it on Instagram and tag me at When Walls Can Talk with underscores for spaces, so that I can thank you personally and see what you liked, what you enjoyed, what thoughts you have wrapping up each of these episodes. Do not forget to leave a review, let your friends know, because it truly benefits our algorithm, helps us get on the iTunes and Apple Podcast charts, and you might just get a shout out at the beginning of our next episode for however long I have new reviews to share. Don't forget that the glorious return of Cinematic Secrets, The Dark Side of the Silver Screen, happened just a few days ago, so if you haven't checked it out yet, the episode on the curse and controversy of Rosemary's Baby is already up and available on that podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts. So check it out and stick around for the rest of our journey as a community and as a podcast. Take extra good care of yourself, be kind to those around you, and I'll catch you next Saturday. So long.